U.S. ethanol production has been a controversial topic in some circles because the great majority of it comes from corn. It's your classic food versus fuel argument. Corn-based ethanol augments our ability to domestically produce fuel, but some argue that it's using so much corn that it's driving up the cost of food. For more than a decade, though, there has been an alternative, making ethanol from waste, non-food sources like corn silage or waste wood. The only problem is that the sugars contained in those products are hard to extract, and until recently, the process has been deemed economically unviable. But new technology and a new partnership just down the road in Stanley, Wisconsin, is looking to change all of those perceptions. As Ace Ethanol and Sweetwater Energy join forces to use waste products to augment ethanol production. And we get into the details this hour on the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for tuning us in this afternoon. I'm joined by two of the players in this ethanol collaboration. Jack Barron is the Chief Operating Officer of Sweetwater Energy, a biotech firm specializing in extracting sugars from non-food sources such as agricultural waste and woody biomass. Located in Rochester, New York, Mr. Barron joins us by phone. Jack Barron, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome, Rich. A pleasure to be here.
Our pleasure. And Bob Sather is the Governmental Relations Director and co-founder of the Ace Ethanol Plant in Stanley, Wisconsin. He joins us by phone as well from Florida. Bob Sather, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having us on, Rick. Our pleasure.
And listeners, if you'd like to get into the conversation, do give us a call. The number is 800-228-5615. We're talking about a first-of-its-kind agreement, again, between Ace Ethanol and Stanley and Sweetwater Energy to produce sugars that can be used for ethanol production from waste products and non-food products, most importantly. And I want to start with Jack Barron very quickly. And when we hear about cellulosic ethanol, what exactly are we talking about, and how does Sweetwater fit into this umbrella term?
Well, Rich, your description is very accurate. It really is. Cellulosic ethanol comes from sugars that are created from non-food sources, such as agricultural waste products, could be corn stover, which is what's left over on the fields. And after corn has been harvested, mm-hmm. a certain amount of that needs to remain for nutrient value for the soil and for to prevent erosion. But as corn yields have generally increased over the last 30 years, you know, last year being an unusual year because of the drought, corn stover has actually become a little bit of a problem for many farmers, and they want to extract a certain portion of that, remove it from the fields after the corn harvesting is done. So we help alleviate that problem and actually turn that into another cash crop for the farmers. Beyond that, there's a lot of woody biomass in Wisconsin specifically, but really throughout many portions of the U.S., wood chips, wood thinnings from forest floors and lumbering operations and sawmill operations that currently is most often burned. And it truly is a waste product, really a suite of waste products. We can take the cellulose and the sugars that are in that product today and through our technical process extract highly fermentable sugars that have low inhibitors so the sugars are friendly to yeasts and friendly to microorganisms that ferment those sugars into ethanol and, frankly, other biochemicals and very common and important industrial chemicals that we all use every day in paints and adhesives and everything from textiles to carpets to the plastics in your computer and cell phone can literally be made from the carbon that comes from cellulosic sugar in a sustainable way, and with oil prices being as high as they are, are likely to remain for some time, really replacing the that source of carbon, which is where the plastics get their carbon from today. It's really from the carbon in a barrel of oil. And we're talking about the carbon that comes from sugar, in this case, again, sustainably, sugar that came out of the atmosphere last year, or in the case of woody biomass over the last 20 or 30 years, versus sugar that's 150 million years old from the ground.
That's fascinating stuff. And before we get a little deeper into the science of Bob Sather, so how will this agreement between Ace Ethanol and Sweetwater work? I mean, what are people going to see happening in Stanley?
Good question. First of all, let me congratulate Sweetwater on this breakthrough technology. We've been working with Sweetwater in a collaborative manner in the last 3 years. Matter of fact, about 3 years ago in Trade Association, we were introduced to the team of Sweetwater's, and finally, we've come to a position by which we realize that, yes, it is technologically feasible and that it would be symbiotically in the benefit of both Sweetwater's, us, and a number of other players in the field. So we're real pleased for this. So in essence, though, it will make the one thing about the ethanol made from cellulosic materials is has several advantages. It's more efficient as a motor fuel versus the corn-based ethanol is about 3% less efficient than the normal gasoline that you buy at the gas station. This will be equal to it.
Hmm. And, why is that?
It's because it's made from cellulosic materials, and that just has a higher carbon output.
Okay.
It has higher demand by the blenders because it's a better fuel. That's another advantage. It's environmentally green by reducing greenhouse gas emissions, much more so because the overall production of it is much more friendly to the environment. It's less costly to process than corn-based because we don't have to go through some of the very upfront processing using this technology. And it has potential tax credits now because it is an advanced fuel, and it has higher profitability for Ace Ethanol. We're talking about another $100 million to the bottom line over the period of 10 years, or 16 years, I'm sorry, period of 16 years.
Now, Jack Barron, I want to, there's sugar in pretty much every organic thing, and as far as I know, I mean, I'm no scientist, but why is it so hard, or why has it been so hard to get sugars from from cellulosic materials? What has been the hang-up?
That's a great question. Believe it or not, the process, first time sugars were extracted from organic materials that were fermentable was in the late 1890s in Germany. And so people have been trying to do it for a long, long time. And there have been a few major hurdles. The largest hurdle really has been pretreatment. And then the second largest hurdle really has been the inhibitor level that is created from various inhibitors. When you break down cellulosic material, let's talk about wood. All of them are fairly close in a lot of ways, but each has its own specific nuances. But in talking about, let's say, hardwoods,
mm-hmm.
you're talking about breaking down the cellulose, and you're right, Rich, that virtually all organic material on this planet is from carbon. And so we're really getting to the carbon from these sugars. So wood has two primary sources of sugar. One is hemicellulose, and the second is cellulose. And cellulose, they're both are fairly difficult to break down. So there's a thermochemical process that we're using, a combination of catalysts and heat under pressure to break down the cellulose. And there's a mechanical process involved as well, where there are several stages of grinding to get very uniform particle size and a nice large surface area. Effectively, when you get small particles, you get large surface area. And believe it or not, that has been one of the major stumbling blocks for the industry. It's economically being able to do this, which has really been the key. Can you get lower-cost sugars that are highly fermentable on the back end with low inhibitors in your solution so that you can then create products like ethanol at a reasonable profit versus corn, which, you know, is a well-known established process. Now, fermentation, as you know, goes back thousands of years,
mm-hmm.
from beer and wine and, ethanol in many forms. And yeast, you know, we've known for a long, long time, is highly successful at fermenting sugars into ethanol. So that's really, I'd say, a fairly easy portion of the whole thing. Modern chemistry has brought about not only this pretreatment methodology that we and partners of ours in Denmark have patents around, But also then there's a process on the back end using enzymes. And maybe the easiest analogy for people to understand is, you know, when we're processing sugars in our stomachs, and when cows are processing sugars in their stomachs and in their intestines, they're using enzymes to break those sugars down and break them into really the nutrients that we need. In effect, that's really what's going on in these facilities that we're building as well. And we've got an enzymatic hydrolysis approach after the sugars have been pretreated and the cellulose and hemicellulose have been broken down. We then use enzymes and an enzyme bath over a period of really several days to extract the make the sugars highly fermentable and easily extracted from our process. And then we then deliver those sugars in an aqueous solution. We call it sweet water because that's really what it is. It's sweet water. We deliver that to ACE, and then it ferments much the way that the sugar from cornstarch has been fermenting for years.
Now, you mentioned, we've mentioned hardwood for one feed source. The corn, I forget the term that you used, but basically field waste. What else can be? Because I've looking online, I've seen that you could use garbage, you could use paper, or you could use even human waste. Is that, am I stretching it there?
No, you're not stretching it. Some folks have been working in that arena. A number of folks we've been working with over the last couple of years have focused on municipal solid waste. Paper in particular is popular. We've stayed away from that a bit, not that we will permanently, but we've really focused on feedstocks that we can have a very sustainable supply of at a reasonable price. So hardwoods, mixed hardwoods are excellent. Softwoods work, a little more tricky, frankly. Corn stover is the product that you mentioned that really is what's left on the field after the corn is harvested. We've worked with that rather extensively. Switchgrass gets talked about in the press, and we've worked pretty extensively with switchgrass from multiple states, Tennessee and Pennsylvania in particular, and that works well. Much like corn stover, it has to be baled, and there are some storage tricks. And then you mentioned silage really at the top of the broadcast, and we've been working for years now with ensiling multiple types of biomass. We initially started back in, the company started back in 2006, and we worked in the early days with ensiled corn, which at the time was priced, you know, comparably to really corn, bushels of corn. And because of the volatility associated with corn, we began to move into other directions. So we've been working with an energy sorghum. Sorghum is what they make molasses from. Mm-hmm. There have been quite a number of universities around the country and even locations around the world that have spent a great deal of time and money investigating the best types of crops that could be dedicated energy crops. And several have been bred for the north. There was a variety that was bred over a period of about 3 years that we worked with them at Cornell University. And it was bred specifically for areas like Wisconsin and New York State and Minnesota and Michigan. And it grows incredibly well. And it grows to pretty extreme heights. We're here in western New York State, which is a big dairy area. A lot of people probably don't know that. It's not as big as Wisconsin, but it's frankly quite big in dairy. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of corn is grown to support the dairy industry in this area. And this last year we planted with farmer partners 500 acres of an energy sorghum, the one I mentioned that was bred by Cornell that was subsequently licensed to a seed company called Sirius Seed. And we had a drought this year as well. So this was planted in June, and it was harvested after the first frost in this area, early part of October. And we have a lot of video and farmer testimonials because the farmers we worked with planted it right next to their corn fields. So it's literally physically growing next to the corn. And again, we had a drought, not as severe as Iowa, but pretty severe. People were getting, in this area, you get about 150 bushels of corn to an acre in a normal year. They were getting about 120 to in the best areas, getting 130, so quite a bit off from normal years. Mm-hmm. And we've got in these videos, and if you went out to the fields, which we did, you'd see the corn looks very anemic. It was a poor year for corn, when we harvested the sorghum, the energy cane, it was almost 14 feet tall.
Wow.
So extraordinary stuff in a drought year, and it does better in non-drought years. So a lot of biomass from an acre of land, and it grows on more marginal land. And so it'll grow where the land is a little swampy or, you know, high clay content, high sand content. So it's pretty extraordinary crop, and there are other types of this. Texas A&M bred another variety that grows better in the south, and so on. And so to your earlier question, there are a lot of different types of biomass that are reasonably similar. Now, wood being a little bit of an outlier because it needs to be ground a bit more before you process it. But a number of these types of ag residues and these energy crops are rather similar in terms of how you treat them and how you extract the sugars from the cellulose and the hemicellulose.
So do you see a future of expansive sorghum fields in Wisconsin?
You know, it's certainly conceivable. I mean, we're working with folks in Wisconsin now. We're working with a number of farmers. We're working with folks on the wood side, lumber operations, and so forth. And part of the beauty of our process is that from year to year, or even in multi-campaigns in a single year, we can shift our feedstock. Now, our preference is to have longer-term relationships with folks in the lumber industry and with our farmer partners so that, you know, they can be assured that they're going to get paid on a regular basis and they know what their revenue and profit looks like, you know, per acre or per ton that they're producing. And we know we've got a sustainable supply at a committed price so that as we're delivering sugars into our friends at ACE, you know, they're able to maximize their profit and everybody wins. Farmers are happy, the lumber suppliers are happy, we're happy, and ACE is happy. And that's really the way that this whole agreement has been structured, so that we expect to be in Wisconsin for many, many years. And we also expect that as we do well in Wisconsin and with our partners at ACE, that we're going to grow the relationship and we'll have, you know, a fairly sizable business in Wisconsin.
And with the feedstocks, when you switch feedstocks, don't you need different enzymes or different chemical processes to break them down?
Excellent question. The recipes do change by feedstock. The machine changes a little bit as well. We have specific inserts in terms of screening that do change based on the actual, whether you're using hardwood, softwood, or these ag residues, which, again, the ag residues are pretty similar. But the moisture content also changes. If you're talking about corn stover, it's coming off the field at, you know, 10 to 15% moisture, whereas if you're talking about ensiled energy cane or energy sorghum, it might be as high as 70 to 75% moisture. Mm. And thankfully, again, our technology is capable of handling that. We own a lot of the technology ourselves, and we have U.S. patents that are issued U.S. patents as well as many patents pending. And we've also partnered with a company out of Copenhagen called Biogasol, which is a strange name in translation, I guess, in English, but great people and extremely sharp. And they have patents in the U.S. and international patents around that pretreatment that I mentioned earlier. And they are a tremendously strong partner of ours. And we had our own technology initially. We found another technology that was a leading technology in the world. And then finally, about a year and a half ago, we found the folks in Copenhagen. And we believe that they are, and as a result, with our contract with them, we have an exclusive contract for North America for the next 8 years. We believe that we're years ahead of much of the competition because they started a little over a decade ago in Copenhagen working on the engineering problems associated with pretreating biomass and keeping the inhibitor levels low and being able to process these multiple types of biomass with different moisture contents and different coarseness in terms of and hardness in terms of the grinding requirements needed. There are actually many aspects to it beyond that that I won't go into. But bottom line is they resolved these issues, and they did tremendous work. And they're very close partners. I mean, we have employees frequently living there, and they have employees who are frequently visiting and will be living really with us for long periods of time. So tight collaboration.
reminder to
we'll come back to. We've got the same kind of relationship with Neil Kamet, the CEO, with Bob, and the whole team really at ACE, because these folks are very progressive, and you know, as has been evidenced year after year, the folks at ACE Ethanol, they make things work. And what an ideal partner for us to have, because they're progressive, they're sharp, and they get it done.
Bob Sather.
Just to simplify, if you will, feedstock, number one, is it availability? Number two, the extraction of the concentration of the C5C6 sugar molecules that we use to make ethanol. Now, we will be able to use the first year probably 8% of our production will be from this particular cellulose material supplied by Sweetwaters. We're real pleased about that. The balance will still be used in corn.
Mm-hmm.
However, we'd like to each year incrementally, if you will, increase the cellulosic materials used to make the ethanol and diminish that by which we're using corn ethanol. Why? Because it's less costly as a product to use, and it's simpler to process, to do the fermentation, distillation, and so on, and to make the ethanol. So we're real pleased with the process. We've bench tested this for probably about 6 months now. It will work. We know it will work. And certainly the initial stages of tweaking. We think we have, we don't know this, the most efficient ethanol plant in the United States. Our bottom line certainly verifies that.
Hmm.
And we've been pleased to work with Sweetwaters with this. We're flexible. We're a small company with relative to the size of the industry, but we are innovative, and we can make things happen with the help. And otherwise, there are other companies out there, competitors, that can extract the C5C6 sugar molecules, but some are using very harsh chemicals. No harsh chemicals with Sweetwater processing. It's environmentally the most friendly that you could ever have.
A reminder to our listeners, we're talking about a first-of-its-kind agreement between ACE Ethanol and Stanley and Sweetwater Energy, a biotech firm in New York, to extract sugars from waste products, which will in turn augment normal corn-based ethanol production. And we'll have more on this this new technology and this new deal when we return. If you've got a question or a comment for our guests, please do give us a call. The number is 800-228-5615. We'll have more West Side in just a bit.
Support for WPR comes from White Hirschbeck Dudek, presenting the Wisconsin Family Business of the Year Award, celebrating 10 years of honoring the work of family businesses in Wisconsin. Information at familybusinessaward.com. Support also comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, offering checking accounts that include a debit card, online banking and bill payment, call 24 phone access, automatic payments, direct deposit, and more. WisconsinCU.org.
It's called Gingarte Capoeira, unique and entertaining, and coming tomorrow evening to the Heidi Center. Jim Oliver greets Ann Sessions, directing the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild production of their Playing Our Song. UWEC psychology educator Dr. April Blesky-Recheck published a report on cross-sex friendships. We'll dig into that. Plus previews of Saturday's Fiber Art Festival and next weekend's Banbury Art Crawl. Standing room only on tomorrow's edition of Spectrum West at 5 p.m. on this Ideas Network station.
If you've missed part of the program, would like to listen again, or just want to check out any of the past West Sides in the last 5 years, I believe, check out the online archives by going to WPR.org, then click on the West Side, and you'll see them right there. You can download it, you can podcast it, you can do whatever you like with it. Enjoy. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking this hour about an effort in Stanley, Wisconsin, to make ethanol not just from corn, but also from corn waste and wood waste, and feasibly, technically, it could be a whole number of products. It's a collaboration between New York-based biotech firm Sweetwater Energy and ACE Ethanol in Stanley, and I'm joined by Jack Barron of Sweetwater Energy and Bob Sather of ACE Ethanol. If you've got a question or a comment on this new technology and what it means for our region, do give us a call. The number is 800-228-5615. That number is 1-800-228-5615. 888-228-5615. You can also leave a post on the Westside Facebook page, and we'll do our best to get it on the air. Back to Jack Barron, I'd like to ask you about Sweet Machines. And it seems like the model of this company, Sweetwater, of this agreement that's going to be taking place in Stanley is all about decentralization. So I imagine the Sweet Machine is the actual unit that does the extraction, but they're portable, or you can have them anywhere? It's not going to be one factory?
That's exactly right. Technically portable. They're skid-mounted, which industrial skids look kind of like giant steel boxes.
Sure.
In effect. But it's a hub-and-spoke model, which means that ACE ethanol is, in fact, the hub where the ethanol is finally made, the final product is created. And Sweetwater really builds the spokes that are the supply operations around that hub, kind of like a bicycle wheel. And these spokes can go up to a max of about 75 miles out, but typically within about 40 miles. And so we'll start with one, and we're looking for sites now. And that will potentially be very close to the ACE hub itself. But as I said, these spokes can go fairly distant. So we actually have an issued U.S. patent around that model for taking cellulosic material, a variety of cellulosic materials, processing those into cellulosic sugars, and then for the eventual creation of ethanol. So we own that U.S. patent. And again, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, part of the key is making sure that these sugars are highly fermentable in the ACE process. And so the inhibitor levels are very, very low. There are inhibitors that have various chemical names, hydroxymethyl, furfural, acetic acid, which more people have probably heard of, which are created when you apply a great deal of heat to breaking down biomass. And so you have to really find a gentle process to be able to, as gentle a process as really you can tolerate in a reasonable period of time to create these sugars. And Bob alluded to that. This is a very friendly process from an environmental standpoint, really extremely positive to the biomass itself, which is why we don't create a lot of inhibitors in the first place. And then the small number of inhibitors that are created in the process, we have technology around that to reduce those inhibitors to a point where they're negligible and really allow for the best possible ethanol to be created from our cellulosic sugars.
We've got our first caller of the evening, and we'll go to her right now. And it's Brandy, and she's on the line from Cadott. Brandy, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
I was wondering how much of the alcohol production is subsidized by the federal government. And I'll take the answer off air, please.
Absolutely zero subsidized by corn-based ethanol. Zero. However, let me say this parenthetically. Tens of billions of dollars are subsidized by big oil who do not need the money. They get the tax credits.
Gotcha. And the same question, I guess, I will pose to Jack Barron. I believe that the endeavor, the cellulosic ethanol endeavor, sees some kind of tax credits or subsidies, does it not?
It does. There was back in 2006 and 2007, there was congressional action, mm-hmm. really driven by President Bush and Vice President Cheney at the time of Pelosi Congress, so a truly bipartisan bit of work around biofuels and the addition of biofuels into the U.S. fuel supply to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. That was the primary focus. Secondary focus was really creating U.S. jobs, I think, as it's safe to say. And there was wide recognition at the time that you could only use so much corn because of the food versus fuel debate to make biofuels. And so Congress at the time when they enacted the Renewable Fuel Standard 2, what they put in place was that they would cap corn ethanol into the U.S. fuel supply at 15 billion gallons. And we're perhaps a year away from reaching that cap, so we're not all that far away from it anymore. Hmm. So, but they went beyond that. And so what Congress did was they established all the way through 2022 how much biofuel would be blended into the U.S. fuel supply. And they wanted by 2022 biofuel to be roughly one quarter of what they were projecting the U.S. fuel supply to need at that time. So 36 billion gallons is the number for 2022 of biofuel that is required to be blended into the U.S. fuel supply. But as I mentioned, they capped corn at 15 billion gallons. So the large gap there, the increment between 36 billion and 15, the 21 billion gallons gap, Congress specified that that would come from either cellulosic or advanced sources. So it'll still be biofuel, but it'll either come from cellulosic sources such as we provide or other advanced sources such as being sourced from algae or carbon dioxide potentially. There are a lot of there's a lot of academic research going on in those regards, but nothing near commercialization, from at least from my vantage point. But this is what we do is commercial today, or will be commercial with ACE in the near term, and that's really quite exciting. So as Bob said, Congress did support that, though. They realized that a great deal of research had to be done, both at academic institutions and in the private sector, and we are clearly in the private sector. And they wanted to support that, so they did create a methodology for some subsidies and tax incentives, which, you know, as most people recognize, subsidies and tax incentives go away over time. Mm-hmm. They just do,
right.
And that's the way the markets are designed, and that makes good sense. I believe in less spending as a general rule, for sure, you know, spending within your means, clearly. As Bob pointed out, there have been subsidies for a long, long time in the oil industry. The railroads were subsidized when we built those as well, but it was for public good.
Right.
And in many ways, this is for a public good. It's also, you know, in reducing our dependence on foreign oil. It's for a public good in American jobs that can never leave American soil because they're tied to the soil. Mm. It's advanced technology that, frankly, we can export from the United States, which is pretty tremendous. And as you mentioned earlier, it's not only ethanol either. It's not only from these sugars. There are a great many industries, and you can quote me on this. Mm-hmm. I think you could quote others too. But over the next 10 years, you will see many, many industries around biochemistry to create biochemicals, paints, adhesives, solvents, textiles, an enormous number of products that are coming from the carbon in oil today. Mm-hmm. Will be coming from sustainable sugars that are extracted from American soils and from forests and from farms and from waste products. And it ultimately, it then comes down to a question of efficiency.
Mm. Okay.
Let me take all these waste products and create final products.
You want to remember, this is an advanced fuel. It's an emerging technology. Anytime there's emerging technology, you're talking about extremely high risk. So for this particular cellulosic ethanol, there are tax incentives, but they're only 1 year extender for one more year. We don't know if they'll exist 2-3 years down the line or not. We hope it will be until it becomes a mature industry, such as certainly big oil has been a mature industry for about 100 years, but they still receive tax credits. And now, as Jack made mention, all emerging industries such as airlines, such as railroads, and a number of other emerging institutions received tax credits as an incentive so they could happen. And they fade away after a short period of time once that emerging industry becomes somewhat more of a mature industry.
Now, before I get into some of the other materials that can be made and from waste materials like and from cellulosic sugars, the credits or the subsidies that are specifically for cellulosic endeavors, when will that expire? Is it set to expire?
Next year, 1 year. It's going to, we had a 1 year extension.
Okay, but you're confident still that even with the without that you'll be profitable in your.
We at ACE Ethanol did not factor in any subsidies, so yes.
Okay,
that's a good question, and we can make isoprenes. And from isoprene, you can make many other chemicals that are used now by other type of hydrocarbons. And so there's just a lot of things can do, polymers and so on and so forth, that Jack had mentioned too.
Right, yeah, and Jack, I've read on in one of the articles that I read regarding Sweetwater that a big goal, and it seemed almost like it was a main goal for the future, like an end game or something, but isn't biofuels, but bioplastics and, you know, garbage bags made from cellulosic carbon, I guess. So does this mean that ethanol is just kind of a, or that the sugars for ethanol is kind of a stepping stone?
To a certain extent. I mean, ethanol is a great fuel. I don't think it really gets the kind of positive press, frankly, that it should. It's in a wonderful success story here and in Brazil in particular, U.S. being the largest producer of ethanol by far in the world. And we're all using it every day, and yet it doesn't – I certainly don't think it gets the desserts that it should. That said, I think we'll be using ethanol for a great many years.
Mm-hmm. With the right engine, using ethanol at a 30% blend, using a turbocharging system, direct injection, we can get about 50 miles per gallon of gasoline. The automobile manufacturers now have engines on the running that can do that. I've toured those plants. They are getting that type of mileage. But it's bringing all those combinations of things together to meet the Tier 3 standards as well as CAFE standards set by the federal government. That's for another show, though.
Jack, the plastics, I'm interested in that. I mean, is that going? Sure. Do you see that as being being just a huge boon someday?
Absolutely.
As you mentioned before, they're
the two largest soft drink manufacturers in the United States. We all know who they are. Have publicly expressed major programs around bioplastics for their bottling operations that are going on today. If you walk down the aisle at your local supermarket, and you probably have some in your refrigerator right now that have plant bottle on them, mm-hmm. Up to 30% of the bottle coming from plant sources, which is really coming from the carbon from that we've talked about on this show, so that really the carbon from sugars, as opposed to the carbon from petroleum. And over those, both of those major companies have also expressed that within the next 3 to 5 years, they expect to be making more and more of their bottles with partners from sugars like these. Now, they call it plant material because for a variety of reasons, but ultimately it's coming from the carbon in the sugars, and it doesn't add sugar to the bottle or to the liquids in the bottle any more than the petroleum adds in the plastic adds petroleum, which it doesn't. Hmm. So that said, that's a fantastic thing because, as you know, just how many plastic bottles are going into landfills each year right now that are being really sourced from oil, there's a secondary benefit to this. Let me talk about why I think, first of all, these soft drink manufacturers are very sharp, and they are committed to green technology, but no one is committed to green technology, or I don't think you can drive green markets if it's not economically wise, if it's not green in a company's wallet or in an individual's wallet. And that's what's changed. As now that the cost of a barrel of oil is so incredibly high, and this modern chemistry has come about to make these processes much less expensive, much more practical in a small facility like we build, in particular, it becomes the way that really the entire industry will move. So if you think about why a major soft drink manufacturer would want their soda pop delivered in a plastic bottle, it comes down to cost first. Really because of the cost of a barrel of oil. But secondarily, you can engineer these plastics now because they're not coming from oil, but they're coming from sugar in plants. You can engineer these bottles so that instead of it taking 100 years in a landfill to go back to carbon, it can go back to carbon in 6 months.
Pretty wild stuff. That seems like a lofty but a very, very exciting and necessary goal. If we could reduce the amount of material that just rots forever, that'd be very exciting.
Just think this, Rick. Any plastic out of there, polymers, can be made to be biodegradable, just like Jack said. You put it in the landfill, it's gone within a year or less.
And with that, let's take our final break here on the West Side. We're talking about ethanol. We're talking about waste products. And it's a collaboration between two companies here, one in western Wisconsin, one in New York, to produce sugars from waste products like waste wood or corn waste or field waste, and use that sugar to distill ethanol. It's replacing some of the need for corn, and it's also more efficient. On the line, we've got Jack Barron. He's the chief operating officer of Sweetwater Energy in Rochester, New York. And we've got Bob Sather, who is the governmental relations director and co-founder of Ace Ethanol Plant in Stanley, Wisconsin. We'll have more from these two gentlemen, and we'll take more of your calls when we return. This is The West Side. Welcome back to The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and we're talking this hour about an effort between two companies to produce ethanol from sugars pulled from waste products instead of from corn. And those companies being Ace Ethanol in Stanley, Wisconsin, and their partner, Sweetwater Energy, in Rochester, New York. On the line, we've got Jack Barron, Chief Operating Officer of Sweetwater, and Bob Sather, Governmental Affairs or Governmental Relations Director for Ace Ethanol in Stanley. If you've got a question or comment for either of the guests, give us a call, 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. Now, Bob Sather, specifically about this project, this was a big deal, and I've read that there's going to be perhaps even right beside the Ace Ethanol plant, there would be another plant producing this sweet water. But it sounds like it could be located anywhere. Where will this physical plant be?
Well, we're talking about Sweetwater's plant, and it's up to them to decide where they're going to locate. The closer, the better, of course.
Sure.
But I think we've missed a little bit here. This big news is Ace Ethanol will be the first company in the United States, in the world, using sweet water technology to make ethanol, the first in the world. So we're real proud about that. So that would be up to Jack's question. I don't know if they have a site specific yet by which they purchased land, but they will be if we get this site close.
Jack Barron?
Bob's exactly right. We haven't selected a final site yet, and that's, again, part of the beauty. We can go as far out as we like. Closer is better. Provided we can get the feedstock sustainably delivered really to our dock there, whether they come from local farms or coming from lumber operations. Eventually, again, as things go well, and as Bob mentioned earlier, we hope to have multiple spokes around the central hub of ACE. But Bob raised a great point. This is the first time in the world that this technology is viable, and between the expertise at ACE and the expertise at Sweetwater, we're going to make it happen. It's exciting. It's really quite exciting for the whole corn ethanol industry, in addition to being really exciting, I think, for Wisconsin and for farmers. And the reason it's so exciting for the corn ethanol industry is it represents a way for the corn ethanol industry to bridge into something beyond corn, while still working with the same farmer suppliers they've been working with for years, mm-hmm. and potentially even providing additional revenue sources into those farmers by using some of their waste products like corn stover or this energy cane, which grows quite well on farmland.
Yeah, remember, this is a tremendous job creation. People have to go out there to take an army of people to gather up all that fallen wood products, waste products, and also the farmers, of course, they do can harvest their own stovers, but this is going to create more jobs and a better economic for the entire Stanley area.
Let's take a call. We've got Jim in Eau Claire. Jim in Cameron. Jim, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's your question for our guests?
Good evening, Rich and guests. I'm wondering, first of all, I see the tremendous value for the farm community in this process, giving us another means of marketing. However, I'm also curious about how good a source recycled paper is for this fermentable sugar, and are there types of paper that are more adaptable to the process? For instance, you know, the clear whites or the newsprints, or, you know, can a person use even some of the colored papers for it?
It's a good question. We touched on it a little bit earlier, but Jack Barron.
Sure. We are working with one company that's based in the U.K. who've done it, and there are many companies like them, although they're certainly a leader. And they've got a separation technology to really separate municipal solid waste from the plastics, from the metals, from the paper. And whether the paper is colored paper or it's former newsprint or it's cardboard, it all works reasonably well once it goes through their process in particular. And I, from my vantage point, it, you will hear about, and you can frankly Google on that and find a lot of work that's going on in Iowa and in Virginia and elsewhere around municipal solid waste. And once you've got this paper separated, they really typically transform it into kind of a paste through a treatment process, and then you extract the sugars at that point. And we were working with those folks initially because we were going to augment their paper-based sugars with our sugars coming from these ag wastes and from woody biomass. And, in fact, we may still be doing some of that. But I think over the course of the next 5-10 years, you'll be hearing a lot more about municipal solid waste separation technology as it's coming along and the extraction of sugars from the paper once the paper's been treated. So I think it's a very promising technology. We're really ready for prime time now, which is why we entered into this agreement with the folks at ACE. And they, as Bob mentioned, we really started working with the ACE team about 3 years ago, and the ACE team was evaluating cellulosic sugar options before that. Mm-hmm. So this has been a promise in the industry for a long, long time. As I mentioned, Congress passed legislation in 07 that was around cellulosic. So it's been hoped for a great many years. DuPont and POET are doing some large-scale facilities around cellulosic in Iowa. Abengoa is doing a similar large location in Kansas. There's a company called Chemtex that has really the first large-scale operational cellulosic facility in Italy up and running as of this past November, December, and they're producing cellulosic ethanol now. But this is different, as Bob mentioned. This is really taking a corn ethanol facility, existing great assets, and beginning to bridge that corn ethanol facility into cellulosic. And this is the first time that'll be done. But as Bob said in one interview, he believes it'll become more the standard for the corn ethanol industry. And I agree with him, as does the rest of our team.
By the way, there are 109 ethanol plants in the United States today, 9 in the state of Wisconsin. And I would venture to say within 10 to 15 years, you're going to see over 50% of them adopting this technology. I'm very confident. The best thing out there. We've been looking for the last 5, 6 years evaluating similar, different technologies that's supposed to produce the same results that just does not verify, would not be feasible.
Now, Bob Sather, how much corn will be offset by this? You mentioned you're hoping, what, 3.6 million gallons during the initial phase of this, of ethanol produced from the sugars and the sugar water. How much corn
is that? Let me just say off the top of my head an estimate, 1.5 million bushels probably.
Okay. And so 3.6 million gallons, and with ACE ethanol capable of producing around 50 million gallons per year, that seems like it's just a drop in the bucket here.
What's 8%? But remember, it's not the end. It's the beginning.
Okay.
The work toward an end, not the end.
And the...
As Jack mentioned, the spoke. We can have a number of spokes. Each spoke we put on produce about between 7.5% more cellulosic ethanol versus corn-based ethanol.
And Jack Barron, speaking of the spokes, why not go with the large centralized facility if this technology that you've got is really the winner among all the other technologies used to extract sugars and carbon and from these feedstocks? Why not build a giant plant and just start shipping it across the country, the sweet water?
Great question, Rich, and there are a couple answers. One is it's a lot less expensive to build these smaller facilities, place those smaller facilities near where the biomass is grown, where it's harvested, and where it's easily stored, and then convert the biomass into high-value sugars, concentrate those sugars down, and then transport the high-value sugars into the centralized hub. You can imagine just the transportation costs alone of bringing biomass from 100 miles around a large centralized facility, unless you've got a huge concentration of one particular type of biomass, such as they have in Iowa with corn stover, which has really been the focus for publicly stated focus for DuPont and for POET. Mm. And you could do it in the Pacific Northwest with woody biomass as well. But, again, the problem becomes the size of this centralized facility you need to build to do that. The reported numbers for the DuPont facility, I think it's $250 million facility to create about 25 million gallons of cellulosic ethanol per year. Mm. The cost for, I think, the POET facility is right around $200 million in Iowa. And so when you look at the capital expenditure per gallon with our technology, coupled with the money that ACE has already invested in the assets in their Stanley facility, it's a lot less expensive to do it this way. So it's less expensive to move than moving the biomass around, and it's less expensive from a capital standpoint to do it this way.
All right, let's think one more call, a final call of the evening, and we go to Chippewa County, and we've got Kevin on the line. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hey, with some of the things that we've seen happen with corn ethanol come in, and a big shift to like high nitrogen use and soil erosion.
Mm-hmm.
How soon do you see these alternative crops coming in to kind of solve some of those problems?
Let's go to Bob Sathan and maybe get a comment from Jack. We are getting very close to the top of the hour, so if you guys could sum it up really nicely, that'd be great.
Well, we will go with alternative crops to the extent that we can process that and make cellulosic-type ethanol.
All right, and Jack Barron, any thoughts?
Exactly that. As early as the middle of 2014, in 2014, we'll see some alternative crops which can go into rotation with existing crops.
All right, that's our time. I'd like to thank both of you very much for participating in the program. Jack Barron is the COO of Sweetwater Energy based in Rochester, New York, and Bob Sather is the Governmental Relations Director for ACE Ethanol and Stanley. Thank you both very much, and thanks for the callers. This is The West Side. We'll chat again next week.